You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
If you're trying to lock up your home to prevent a serial killer with an alien parasite inside of him from getting in, or from preventing an evil killer doll from getting out, you might be interested in this week's sponsor for the Bloom Files, Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Truth is out there, and here, who knows? Either way, we are opening up the Bloom Files here on Post Show Recaps, an X-Files First Watch / Rewatch podcast. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here to bring you a tale of two very different witch hunts as we talk about Chinga and Travelers on the X-Files Season 5. But of course, I'm not alone. I'm joined by my own doll.
Ew.
And I'm not just talking about her porcelain skin.
Fair. I do have very pale skin, but I don't want to be compared to this weird AF doll.
Wait, don't you like to have fun?
Let's have fun.
Yeah, don't you want to do the hokey pokey?
Let's have fun.
Is that all you're going to say this entire episode?
The whole episode. So, as you said at the end of watching this, worst episode ever so far.
Yeah, so, spoiler alert, yeah, that's my feeling. After specifically Chinga. Travelers, I actually very much enjoyed.
Travelers is a totally different subject, but Chinga, bad.
Yeah, so this is the one I've liked the least so far.
I don't like this episode, but I did feel like when we talked about it last week, we skipped it initially, and then I said, oh, I remember this is written by Stephen King. Like, let's go back and watch it just for, like, the sake of watching it. But, yeah.
Well, it's a good reminder why Stephen King has written a lot of prolific horror fiction and some things that just don't work.
Well, and I read a lot about how this was created. I guess that he approached David Duchovny first and was like, I love the X-Files, I want to write for it, then got in touch with Chris Carter and wrote a lot of stuff, but basically they were like, oh, he doesn't know anything about how to write for Mulder and Scully.
Right, essentially they were doing just like a Stephen King story instead of an X-Files episode.
Yeah, and so Chris Carter ended up just rewriting a ton of it. And then they also had to reshoot a ton of it because Scully was like Gillian Anderson was misinterpreting how her lines were supposed to be read with the sheriff.
Wait, what?
So I guess initially she thought a lot of the things she was saying to the sheriff were tongue in cheek, like very sarcastic, very but Chris Carter was like, no, it's serious. Like you're not tongue in cheek. So they had to like edit a ton and like reshoot a ton. And
well, here's my hot take.
Anyway,
my hot take as well is that I think Stephen King is a great writer. I don't think he's a good screenwriter.
And
there's a difference, right? Like novelists have tried to pen screenplays before, but there's a difference between like using all that descriptive text and then sort of eliminating that when you just put it on
screen. Well, I guess the director for this episode was quoted in saying that, like, the nuts and bolts are Stephen King. Like, the story and the idea.
Oh, yeah, it takes place in Maine.
Yeah, the nuts and bolts are Stephen King, but the rest is Chris Carter. Like, he basically had to, like, write the whole thing. So.
I think my issue with the episode overall is, well, first of all, it was sort of like the mirror image of War of the Copperphages, right?
Yeah.
That this is Scully goes to go relax somewhere, gets wrapped up in a wacky tale, and then you have the, you know, with the other party being bored on the other line, except Mulder does not go to help Scully.
He doesn't go to help, but she also plays it off much less, like, she plays it off better than he did, you know, like, she wasn't, plus she's Scully, she's more concerned about him than he is about her, but...
Yeah, I think my issues lie in the fact that, you know, it seemed like the story was, like, the main weird thing was interesting to a certain extent, but I wasn't a huge fan of the fact that they didn't explain anything behind it.
The thing about Stephen King that I mean, Stephen King isn't, like, my favorite author in the world. Like, I don't enjoy, like, horror novels, but I do feel like the cool thing about him is very much so the mystery of what's going on. You know, like, Storm of the Century is like one of the scariest movies of all time and novels, but it's because you don't know what's going on and there's this element of uncertainty. But I felt from the beginning of this episode, I knew exactly what was happening. There's an evil doll. It's controlling people.
Yeah, but I also...
I don't find that spooky.
But I personally actually would have liked some sort of explanation of like, okay, this doll was like worshipped by a cult. It just was, hey, here's a freaky doll that they fished out of the sea that can mind control people.
We needed a little M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Yeah, exactly. a little bit at least. And the other issue that I have with this is that we're going to spend the vast majority of this episode with Scully and the sheriff, basically like two steps behind of this family the entire time. And I felt a little too late for them to come together.
Yeah. And there was a lot of like, and they try to explain this, but a lot of like stuff happening in the town with the mom and the sheriff.
Yeah, they were trying to really drop us with all this exposition, right? Of like, okay, here's this lady,
and I was
Melissa.
Like, why do I care about this? Like,
well, her name's Melissa, so you know that it's got to be involved.
Yeah, which is where we start in Maine.
Yeah, and it's also very familiar. I mean, only a few episodes ago, right? Scully gets a call from someone she thinks is Melissa about a little girl.
Yeah, she has no reaction to her name being Melissa in this, except that she's like concerned.
Yeah. So Spencer, you said Maine. Spencer runs down actually like all of the King tropes that we go through here.
So many.
Takes place in Maine. The leads are like middle-aged adults or young kids. Someone has a special ability or an intuition. Mm-hmm. We have a religious fanatic.
Yep.
And then we have, you know, there's a cozy small town with a deadly secret. Mm-hmm. And then there's, as I mentioned before, a supernatural force of unexplainable evil. Emphasis on unexplainable.
Yeah, but I do feel like it's unexplainable, but also very clear what's happening with this evil doll. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, so we're at the grocery store.
Which I also read, this is the first time they shot in an actual grocery store for
a
scene.
Wait, really?
Everything else was like, in previous episodes, I guess, had been developed or like on a soundstage somewhere.
Even that one time when Scully pays by check and the barcode gets scanned with her implant?
I guess.
Was on a soundstage?
This is what I read, that this was, a lot of the scenes were shot on location.
In Maine?
I don't think in Maine, but I think supermarket scenes were filmed in a real store.
Okay, well, I guess they are exploring a lot of the store in this one, right? We're going to go down multiple aisles. So we get Melissa, we get Polly. First off, is anyone named Polly nowadays? Has Polly gone as a name?
Isn't that the name of the girl from that weird movie, Polly? What? No, that's a Jennifer Aniston movie, isn't
that's
it?
That's Along Came Polly.
Yeah, Along Came Polly.
There's also Polly Pocket. So maybe that's why, a generation didn't want to name themselves after dolls, so they got rid of
Polly
them.
Polly Pocket is an excellent toy.
Would you name your child after Polly Pocket?
No, because I feel like Polly Pocket is not what I think of when I think of Polly. I think of Polly Wannacracker.
Oh, you think of a parrot.
I think of a little parrot.
Yeah, so...
Anyway, Polly is, like, the worst child actress in the face of the planet.
Well, I think it's not the actress, it's the character. The character is, like...
Possessed
basically. Veruca Salt, essentially. Yeah. Like, she's a brat.
Well, and the issue I have also with her in this episode is that it is said that she, like, is an odd child. Like, it's insinuated that maybe she has a bit of a disability, but at the end of the episode, we see that that's not the case. She's been possessed.
Yeah, or something. Like, when the
which
doll
is
disappears,
like awful.
She just, like, blinks her eyes, right?
And she's, like, awake. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess
which is awful.
So I guess the implication was that the doll had sort of possessed her, and this is why she's
acting
people
were just assuming that she had some sort of developmental disability that just appeared.
Yeah. So they're walking to the supermarket. But like you said, we pretty much get... we get a glance as to essentially what the MO is in Emmy. Yeah. here. Basically, she has this doll. You have this harried single mother, Melissa, who's just like, I just need to get through the grocery store.
She just needs to get through the grocery store, but suddenly she starts seeing things in the window of the freezer.
Yeah, this was weird.
Namely,
to me.
She sees the store's butcher, Dave, with a knife in his eye.
Yeah, but it was so odd where she's just looking at the freezer
Melissa.
Window. Help me! And yep. This is where we're going to get this the entire time. We're like, in whatever the glassy surface Melissa is facing, she's going to get some sort of premonition as to how someone is going to
and
die.
And it's never explained why she gets these premonitions.
Yeah, could it be like the doll is in her mind, but in that case, is the doll then telling her this is exactly what's going to happen, or does the doll know the future?
I think that Melissa happens to have some kind of ability that
which is, again, a very Stephen King thing.
Yeah, but like it's separate from the doll, but again, not explained.
But we see the power of the doll here, at least, in that the doll, eyes shoot open, let's have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts, I didn't even realize this, because I don't think, so they don't name the doll in the episode.
But her name is Ching, the doll is called Chinga.
Right, but they don't say that in the episode. But also, bad. Correct me if I'm wrong here.
Not good.
Is Chinga a bad word in Spanish?
It's a Spanish, like, slang curse, basically.
Oh,
but it is a bad word in Spanish. And apparently, Stephen King nor Chris Carter knew that. Which is just not great,
just
guys.
Just consult with people before you name your episodes.
I mean, I guess Google didn't exist then, which... Or did it? Were there search engines at this
late
time?
Late 90s existed. You could, like, Netscape it.
You can Netscape it, AOL search, bar it.
So basically this doll, once she says, let's have fun, the fun is making people slap themselves. And we're going to see, like, the after effects is that she's making people claw at their eyes.
Yeah.
Some are going to do a better job of clawing at their own eyes than others.
Yeah, this was confusing at first. We were like, why are these people crying? And then we realize it's because they're clawing at their eyes. And some people do it in such a way that their eyes, like, are swollen. And then others just have, like, a little bit of blood.
Maybe it depends on how long their nails were, you know?
Maybe. Or maybe when they start.
Yeah. So, the butcher, everyone's going crazy. I wrote, not the cans, because this poor guy knocks over the can display.
Yeah.
And basically, the butcher sees the doll's reflection and is controlled to stab himself in the eye, as the freezer
door
predicted.
I don't think he sees the reflection of the doll. I think he sees, you're supposed to assume the doll is, like, sentient at that point,
but like,
walking.
But wasn't the doll with Polly?
Yes, but then it somehow gets away from Polly and...
See, I'd imagine it was, like, image projecting itself.
Maybe, but it's still, like, it's not, like, a reflection of something. It's, like, it's real, like, you're seeing. Maybe it's, like, a phantom of the doll.
Imagine Phantom of the Opera with Chinga. Summertime Scully, Angela.
Summertime Scully, I love her.
It's a look. I love that short sleeve t-shirt. You pointed this out. So she's going to visit Maine, and she's wearing a Maine
I like
t-shirt.
To think that she spilled something on her shirt and had to, like, buy that at the gas station.
Interesting. I like that idea a lot more than, I'm going to Maine, better get my Maine t-shirt.
Yeah, no, I think it's just supposed to, like, maybe let you know that they're in Maine, but I don't think it's, like, a good way to do that.
No,
maybe you could just have a store sign.
This really screams
you
tourist.
Could just have, like, a sign on the side of the road that said entering Maine, you know, like, you don't need her, like, vacation Scully, but I do love when she throws on that blazer over that t-shirt.
That's a good look.
She looks fly.
So, she ends up getting a call from Mulder, and again, this is now Mulder is going to be sort of sidelined for this episode.
Yeah.
I will say the activities he does in his downtime is infinitely weirder than what Scully does.
Scully does normal things. She was cleaning her gun. She's taking a bath. Yeah. She's like, you know, and then eventually, like, gets a little bit more bored, but he's, like, bored immediately, I guess. So I guess she calls him because Scully, I guess, just stumbles into this grocery store while this is happening.
Yeah, it seems like she pulled up right after the cold open ended.
Basically,
she's pulling in as Melissa and Polly are pulling out.
Yeah, exactly. So, but Mulder seems to think that it's caused by witchcraft.
Yeah, so Mulder, and there's also this fun little thing of, oh, Mulder's watching some sort of TV show where everyone's moaning, but oh, it's the world's deadliest swarms.
Yeah, and so he tells Scully it's the world's deadliest swarms, and she's like, okay, but at the end of the scene do we realize it is, but you're supposed to think it's porn.
Yeah, you think just in the background, like, random noises, like she's undergoing hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
You mentioned, like, Scully going on this monologue right about sorcery / witchcraft, and Mulder just follows up with, marry me.
Well, because she, like, basically, like, it talks all, like, what he considers to be like hot stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's like bedroom talk for Fox Mulder.
Yeah, now. Talk about witchcraft and like stuff like that, and he'll be in your pants in no time.
He'll be hot as a bonfire under a witch that they're trying to burn for Melissa right now.
So anyway, Scully basically is like, I'm on vacation. I'm not dealing with this. She goes back to her hotel, but is sort of like, says that she'll help them out, right?
Yeah, well, basically, she finds out here, because I think the sheriff, yes. This is when the sheriff shows up.
Yeah,
Spencer
shows
let
up.
Us know that the sheriff apparently was played by, Chief Bleepity Bleep from Jose Chung's from Outer
Space,
which is fun.
I didn't even notice.
But they brought them back as a cop. But basically, they're saying, Melissa is sort of a pariah in the town for various reasons, right? The sheriff is saying here that she's coming off as threatening for being pretty and single. We're going to get it from this old lady later on. Like, no, she's related to a witch and she's brought a hex upon this town.
Yeah, but I guess like this is like kind of a bummer that she's like this hot, like young mom. And so the other moms don't like her.
Yeah. And well, like, she also apparently is carrying on with a lurid affair, right? She was seeing Dave the Butcher.
Yeah. So Dave the Butcher is now dead and it's
dead. The Butcher.
And so was her. And then we find out also that her husband was dead. So
right. And she also has a little bit of a suitor here, or at least like a former suitor in Buddy the Cop.
Yeah, Buddy the Cop sucks.
Buddy the Cop is a real sleazebag.
Mm-hmm. He sucks. He deserved it.
Yeah. So, because basically, Scully decides to, she hasn't gone to her hotel room yet. She decides like, okay, fine. I'll look into this alongside the sheriff.
Yeah.
We're going to get a glimpse of Melissa's family because Buddy's going to tip her off, right? Okay, there's suspicion against you. Dave's dead.
Right.
Meet with me. But we're going to start to see Polly's aesthetic, which is to put these antiquated hokey pokey records on.
You didn't have these?
I did not have
them. Okay, so I had a small record player look just like that, and we had these half-size records.
Yeah, right.
But we had a bunch of like kids' music and stuff.
Was the hokey pokey included?
I don't remember, but we definitely had like a little record player that was meant for kids.
I've never listened to the hokey pokey outside of gym class. Like the hokey pokey to me has not transcended the educational medium.
But this is a pretty classic Stephen King thing to do. Like he loves to take like a song like that's like
even before they were doing it in horror trailers, right? It was like take a children's song and slow it down and make it creepy.
Yeah, exactly. And I mentioned it before, but Storm of the Century. No, The Perfect Storm. No, Storm of the Century.
Yeah, Perfect Storm was the Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yes, no. Storm of the Century is the creepiest movie ever, but they use I'm a Little Teapot every time this like devil character kills somebody, the person like sings that song and then like is murdered basically.
So, we get a little bit more background on Polly where apparently Melissa was married to a fisherman who died last year. Since then, Polly went to a daycare and threw a tantrum so fierce that the caretaker slapped her. And then the next thing she knew, this old lady was basically on the ground. And the old lady got disbarred, basically got her daycare closed down, but she somehow blames Polly for it.
Yeah, and it's unclear sort of what happened apart from that, like, she hit Polly because of her behavior, but, like, we don't know what that behavior was, which I guess we can assume it was her being creepy AF.
Yeah, or just being demanding.
Demanding.
Right? Like, being a little
Mommy!
Threat. Put on the hokey pokey, please!
I want my popcorn now!
Polly, it's 1998. We're not putting on the hokey pokey, okay?
Yeah.
You listen to NSYNC anytime soon?
Ugh, yeah, but it was also revealed that, one of the guys leaving the supermarket, I guess, was on the boat with Melissa's husband, and she tells this story about
You're skipping through all this
stuff.
You're skipping past the Dairy Queen trip.
Oh, I forgot about Buddy and the ice cream shop.
Yeah, because this is where they're at.
More cherries!
Yeah, they're at the ice cream shop right now. Well, Buddy reveals here, where he's like, I know I missed my shot with you before, but I want to help you out right now. So it appears that, I think people are maybe angry at Melissa because she seems to have some history with everybody in this town.
Yeah, she seems like a little bit of a slut, but like she just gets around.
She's like the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, they're painting her as that. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. She can do whatever she wants. But he also suggests that she confides in him that she's been seeing everyone dying, too.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's like, why don't you go up to this cabin? You know, run away, basically.
Here, go up to my cabin in the middle of nowhere. Best of luck.
Well, Melissa's going to take the hint because, as you mentioned, Polly's demand of more cherries is met with actually a pretty fresh response, too, from this employee. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I guess the doll made this lady put her hair into the machine.
Yeah, or, like, made her go too close to the machine. Her hair got caught, but if your hair gets caught in a machine like that, it basically will pull your scalp off.
Yeah,
like,
or pull you into the machine.
It can't pull you into the machine. You're too small. So your scalp will come off.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's enough. It seems like she's okay, though. She's one of these rare people to, like, not die at the hands of this doll.
Yeah, and so Buddy also just, he saves her from dying, which is nice.
Exactly. He gets the distracted.
Meanwhile, Melissa and Polly peace out.
Yep, and Scully and the sheriff are going to go visit this. Oh, this old lady sucks,
too. Her glasses are upsetting.
Her glasses, I mean, she basically seems like the head nun of a school without any sort of religious affiliation. She just, like, she seems like the type that, unfortunately, you could look at her and be like, yeah, you probably would
hit a child. Yeah, I would never.
That's like the old school
method.
Sending
my kid to daycare there would be, like, my worst nightmare.
Yeah, and basically, she immediately sort of, like, turns them away, right, saying, that Melissa is no good. She's descended from Salem witches.
And she basically insinuates that, like, Melissa is a witch and has now birthed Polly, who is also clearly evil.
Like, this is Damien. This is the demon child, and nobody's listening to me, and I got disbarred because of it, not because I hit a child.
I don't think it's called disbarring.
I guess that's only for a lawyer, right?
There's no bar that you have to pass to run a daycare.
Imagine.
Yeah.
It's more like a
license.
Yeah, more like the jungle gym bars.
I think you get your license revoked.
Monkey disbarred.
Anyway, monkey disbarred.
Melissa's going to drive. She's going to take Buddy's advice despite being like, okay, take a hot second. She's going to drive up to the cabin, but then Polly's basically like, I don't want to. And then in the back window, she sees the old lady. Help me. And she's like, all right, well, I guess I better drive back home and try to stop that from happening.
I guess. But what she doesn't do that, though, does she? I think they just go to her house and, like, she hides in the house.
Yeah.
I guess what she's doing is hoping that she'll be able to protect this woman by keeping the doll inside.
Just keep putting nails in that house. Eventually, it'll keep the doll out, apparently.
But, like, the doll still seems to be doing whatever it wants. So, like, I don't know
what she thinks. As we see that night, this old lady has her phonograph playing in the middle of the night, and it's playing the Hokey Pokey. It keeps skipping. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Which
again.
Is, as we know, one of Angela's least favorite things.
Yeah. We got a question from Brendan Fitzpatrick of, is there a toy that Asher has that haunts us? I don't think so.
Haunts us? No.
I don't think we'd buy things that, like, would look creepy. I think it's more so there are pieces of media or toys that he has that might annoy us.
Annoy us, yes, for sure. Or things that, like, just, like, we try to buy fairly educational things or things that are not going to drive us insane. That can't be said for the rest of our family who purchases Asher toys. You know, for example, his grandpa bought him a bunch of, like, keys. It was, like, toy keys and a remote and a phone.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of electronics that you press buttons.
They're, like, toy
electronics.
Yeah, they're, like, toy electronics, but there's no off button, and it's, like, super upsetting to me.
There's also things like he has fallen down the rabbit hole of the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, which has some of the worst songs I've
heard
in my life.
I will say that the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse is terrifying.
Yeah, well, like, well, we watched a couple of Mickey series. We watched Mickey and the Roadster Racers, which wasn't that bad.
Yeah, but I hate Mickey.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, you really do hate
Mickey
Mouse.
I just am not a big fan of the Mickey in general.
But we went to Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, which has just, like,
it's, and it also talks to you because it's, like, trying to interact with the kids.
It's doing the Dora thing. It's also, it's much more remedial. Yeah. And it also has,
there's literally no story.
There's very little story, but also the songs that they have
hot
in
dog,
there.
Hot dog, hot diggity dog.
It seems like they took four crew members and just put them in a room and were like, all right, come up with a bunch of songs. We're like,
it's fun
okay.
inside.
Yeah, it's the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. Come inside. It's fun inside.
It's the worst.
Let's
it's terrifying.
Let's have some fun inside.
Yeah, not good.
So to answer the question, no, we are not horrified by anything.
I will say, though, that there are some, like, stuff that my parents inherited from their childhood that are creepy. There's, like, a doll my mom refuses to take from my grandmother's house that used to be my aunt's. She says absolutely not. Like, she won't have it in the house. She thinks it's, like, a creepy doll. So I just think that these days, the toys that we buy for our kids are a little just, they're not creepy yet. But maybe in 20 years, they'll be creepy.
Yeah, it might be a thing with like, oh my God, I can't believe that, you know, Elmo, my God, he became a demon.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just, I think old timey dolls look creepy in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, we don't have any haunted toys.
Let's blast from the past here, Angela. Mm-hmm. We get a Scully Tubbs shot. I feel like it's been a while since they have... you know, focused in on some like Gillian Anderson bathroom action.
She has like, and she also has her like her good hair in this season. Like, they're
Scully with the good hair.
Scully with the good hair. They style her a lot more, you know, like aggressively, I should say. Not aggressively, but they like, you know, clearly straighten her hair and like give her some makeup and all that, you know.
So her luxuriating is interrupted. Mm-hmm. She's finally going to take her vacation because there's been a murder. We saw it. Mulder's going to call her here. And there's this thumping in the background.
Mm-hmm. Like banging, and he says it's construction.
But it's actually him dribbling a basketball?
I just don't understand why he needed to lie about that.
Yeah, like, are you embarrassed you're dribbling a basketball? And if so, stop dribbling the basketball.
Also just say, oh, sorry, I was just dribbling. I was just, I don't know, or... there's nothing. You don't need to explain it. She doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, he's wearing a button-down shirt and...
and his underwear.
Yeah, boxer briefs.
Yeah, he's doing the whole Tom Cruise and Risky Business deal.
Chihuahua.
I guess this is sort of the bachelor lifestyle in the late 90s, right? Like, no pants. Also, all that's in your fridge is expired Sunny Delight.
Oh, God, that was disgusting.
Not even purple stuff in there.
And it also wasn't Sunny D. It was, like, knockoff Sunny D.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't think they'd allow... I don't think Sunny D would be like, yes, please have one of your characters drink our product and regurgitate it back up on screen.
True, very true.
So Mulder actually is in the Scully role here, right? In more ways than one. He basically calls in saying, hey, I heard about your, I was thinking about your case. Have you ever heard of chorea, dancing disease?
Yeah, he clearly is like trying to find a medical explanation to like impress Scully a little bit.
And
like,
so you don't do that to, you don't bring that to the medical doctor.
Yeah, the medical doctor also is like in it right now and like, keep seeing people getting murdered, so she's like confused more than like thinks it's a medical issue.
Now we're back at Shea Pauley.
Shea Pauley.
She just falls asleep to the hokey pokey playing.
I mean, clearly there's something wrong with this
her
girl.
White noise machine is the hokey pokey.
I think. I mean, yes, but also like the doll is possessing this girl. So like when she's sleeping, maybe that's when the doll is like doing stuff.
Yeah. And you talk about how the ubiquitousness of the doll's powers. We see her that the doll also has like a little bit of telekinesis because it can put the record back on the player.
So I guess the doll likes the song.
the doll loves. I mean, it is an old school song. So
and
I think it makes sense.
And so Melissa's like kind of like frazzled and like basically running around the house, like trying to nail everything shut.
Basically, she's trying to prevent the dolls escaping while also slowly trying to conceptualize the plan of, okay, I need to kill the doll.
Yeah, but she can't figure out how.
And now she sees Buddy. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Meanwhile, Scully and the Chief are going to eat a whole ass lobster.
Yeah, but this is another, like, we're in Maine.
Yeah, well, in Maine, you gotta eat a big-ass lobster in the middle of the day.
Exactly. But yeah, so they're eating lobster, and I guess, I forget what they're talking about here, I don't even remember. I guess
The Chief's gonna create some nice lunchtime discussion by saying, oh yeah, by the way, her husband died because he had a grappling hook through the skull.
Right, this is when he tells the story about how they, he had a grappling hook through the skull, and Scully also runs into the guy from outside the supermarket, right?
Yeah, so this is when basically we find out that that guy was, you know...
Oh, she sees him on the boat, that's
right.
Yeah,
and it was like, oh yeah, let me...
It was the same boat.
Exactly, let me interrogate him. Meanwhile, Polly wants popcorn, and she lets her mom know it.
And also, why is her mom making Jiffy Pop? They have a microwave.
Maybe, this is a very old-school town. You have the Hokey Pokey on a record player, and you have Jiffy
Stove
Pop.
Pop.
It's a town
popcorn.
Out of time. I mean, it's also written by Stephen King, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, this is my childhood.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But yeah, so basically, she is making popcorn for this child who is demanding it Veruca Salt style.
Exactly. And Buddy's going to drop in, basically saying... hey, this old lady's dead. Melissa, I think it was you.
Yeah, no, he's being a total asshole here. Melissa's, like, crying, and she's, like, freaking out, and then the doll kills him.
Yeah, basically, he beats himself to death with his own nightstick.
Yeah, bludgeons himself to death. It's really great.
Well, we get a really fun, gruesome image in our flashback as well, where it's revealed that the daddy fisherman basically, like, caught the doll in the net and was like, this will be good for my daughter's birthday, which, I mean, listen, I don't know how much fishermen are making, but, like, incredibly frugal.
He seems like a very sweet man and just, like, was excited to give his daughter a present. He's probably away a lot because it seems like they were on an overnight fishing trip.
Right. So I just wouldn't necessarily give my child something I found in the ocean.
I mean, neither would I, but I don't live in a lobster community in Maine.
When you're basically a merman anyway.
Yeah.
But we do get the image of 3 days later, he comes out and sees the guy. We did not need the grappling hook through the skull, personally.
I needed that.
You personally?
I personally did. I couldn't visualize it myself.
I'm so glad you're satisfied by that.
Never be satisfied.
And I think this is Mulder's last appearance on the phone.
Yes.
And he's kind of being a dick.
He's being a total dick.
He's being like, oh, well, Scully, if the doll's really evil, you should check the plastic ring. Like, dude, look at all the stuff you call her about.
Yeah, no, he's like trying to like play it cool here, but like he's just being an asshole. Basically, all men in this episode are the worst.
Yeah, and old ladies.
And old ladies, yeah.
I mean, Melissa herself is at wit's end.
Yeah, I feel bad for her.
Everyone else dead. Now the only one left is herself with a hammer in the head.
Yeah, because clearly the doll has sensed that she's trying to trap her and kill it.
Yeah.
So, you know, she sees herself bludgeoning herself with a hammer.
And so she's going to try to lock all the doors, fill up the house with gas, and blow herself and her daughter up to Kingdom Come.
Yeah, I just feel like not the best plan, but I guess if you're like in that place of just total like abandon.
Yeah, I think at this point she was just like verging on hysteria.
Yeah, and I mean, she was a good actress, but it's still, I mean, yeah, not great.
Yeah.
But Scully realizes this, bursts into the house, and quickly tosses the doll into the microwave.
Yeah, it's a hot second, though, because first they have to, like, get through the barricade that this lady built.
Yeah, I just skipped that.
And by the time they get to Melissa, the doll has already ordered her to beat herself over the head.
Yeah,
with a
hammer. She stops eventually, but
and then Scully throws it in the microwave and lights it on fire.
Yeah, which is wild.
And so the doll is dead, except it's not dead because it's horror. But before that, Scully comes back to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Mulder has done the typical, I think this was in the Breakfast Club, right?
Yes.
Where you throw the pencils into the ceiling.
Yeah, but he's like playing it cool, and then all of a sudden all these pencils fall in his face, and Scully's like, see you tomorrow.
So the second episode we're going to talk about is much more of an origin story for some mythos in the series, but here's a little hint. I guess we found out about where the I Want to Believe poster comes from. He just bought it in some store.
He just bought it, yeah. I think I knew that, but I don't know.
And so she asked about it because I'm assuming she wanted to send it to the sheriff?
Yes, because I think they had a conversation over lunch that was like very much so, you know, like, how do you believe in witches? Like, what do you believe in? And how do you figure it out? And all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. She wanted to inspire him.
She has a friend, I suppose.
Yes. She made a friend on her vacay.
Never coming back into the series.
She made a friend on her vacay to Maine.
Yeah,
they shared a lobster.
And like you said, whereas Scully really gets brought into the main thing with War of the Coprophages, Scully's really keeping Mulder at an arm's length, basically saying,
I don't need your help.
I didn't work on the case. I was getting out of my head for a few days. Nothing happened.
Yeah, I think the issue with War of the Coprophages is that Mulder really goes in and where Scully doesn't want to, so she like very she
or,
does what
or when she
has
she does,
to.
But I think she's ready to just sort of ignore it and move on.
Yeah, Mulder gets sucked in,
especially
pretty
because it's a pretty. I mean, as Mulder made fun of her before, it's a pretty wackadoo concept of a haunted doll,
and also like not great, like from a perspective of people dying.
Yeah, but as I mentioned before, of course this is a horror story, so this is the end question mark where some fishermen brings up the doll. So did they toss the doll back in the water?
That's a great question.
Or is this another doll?
No, it's the same doll because it's burnt. It's like all charred. So.
Yeah, this is like Chucky, basically.
Yeah.
Mulder invokes it before, where I believe when Chucky came back for the second movie, like he was carved up from the way the first movie ended.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think it's just all not great.
all not great is a great way to describe this episode. It to me felt like
it's like a little a little clocky, a little like just really trying to be a Stephen King episode and just failing.
Yeah, it was clunky. I think it was too separated. I feel like if we had brought Scully Scully has this odd connection with children. I was very surprised, and maybe because it was written by a different person, that we do not bring Scully into the vicinity of this child sooner.
Yeah.
I feel like that could have been, I was waiting for something like that to happen.
But she didn't want to.
And it was there for a minute. Screen time. I feel like it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm excited to have seen the fact that Stephen King was interested enough in the X-Files to write about it. That feels like a mark for how popular this series was at the time.
It's true. No, I agree with that.
Well, we're going to travel from the timeless town here in Maine to the 1990s/1950s right after this break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Picture this, Angela. 1990. Wisconsin.
Mulder may or may not be married.
Oh, God. Yeah, let's talk about... I just want to mention that off the top, because that was a big detail that I noticed and I would imagine a lot of X-Files fans noticed was David Duchovny throughout this episode is wearing a wedding band.
Yeah, and he very prominently... You can very prominently see it at the end.
Yeah, he does
the
same where he folds his hands and he's moving his hands. Yeah. You see a wedding ring and I was like... Wait, so does this imply he was married beforehand?
No, David Duchovny, the person, got married, and he said that he's quoted saying, "That was just me, you know, fooling around. I'd recently gotten married, and I wanted to wear it." And later on, Chris Carter told him that the situation creates a big problem, because if they ever do show anything else that takes place 7 years ago, he'll have to be married. And like he was like, okay, I agree. I won't do it again.
I'm sorry, David Duchovny, that's a tool. Like, you are being such a tool in that moment. That is such...
He basically explained it as like, yeah, Mulder could have been married.
Yeah,
Mulder should just never have mentioned that he was married.
He's a secretive guy. He'd be so...
No, it's just,
fancy
I think he was saying, yeah, that he's one of those people that would just never mention it because it's just not that big of a deal to him.
I think it just really, like, irks me because it reminds me back in the day when I would be a stage manager and you would be a costume designer and actors would just be like...
They would make changes to things.
Yeah,
or
be
like,
oh, no, I was doing that for fun, you know? And it's like, no, you are giving so many other people behind the scenes a headache.
Yeah, like somebody... remembering like all these like girls who just like were so concerned about their looks that they wouldn't wear something that we had like painstakingly designed for them
for a children's theater production.
Yes, that's a good example for sure. But it happened often that just like girls, specifically young theater women, would just often be much more concerned with the way they looked than the character and the design of the costume that was like specifically made for them. So,
yeah, but then you would sometimes have boys that were like, lol, random, I'm going to do these things. And it's like, well, we actually plan things out for a very specific way for a reason.
I remember one time we had to replace an entire pair of pants because the person... who was wearing them wouldn't stop doing spins on his knees, and he wore out the knees. Not during the play.
No, just like...
Just in general.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so I feel Chris Carter's pain here, but I felt very little pain during this episode.
That was
a
good episode.
A really fun flashback episode. I'll be completely honest, I would not have been surprised if this was, like, the backdoor pilot to an X-Files spinoff set in the 1950s.
I mean, maybe that was like a thought, but I did read that it was mostly inspired by the story of a screenwriter who was negatively affected by the sort of blacklisting that happened in Hollywood.
The McCarthyism.
And that the guy who was blacklisted wrote a bunch of movies under the pseudonym Arthur Dale. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So we're back in 1990, though, because... None of this is going to take place in the quote-unquote modern times. It's in 1990 because we're going to see, like,
yeah, it's still 7 years ago. Yeah.
And then back in the 50s. But we're in Wisconsin. The cops come bringing down the door of Mr. Edward Skurr.
Edward Skurr.
We initially, I think, heard it as Skinner. So I was like, is this, like, Skinner's dad or something?
No, I just really like the name Skr.
Edward Skr is a pretty dang funny name.
Skr.
Edward Skr.
I'm so skrred.
Exactly. We're so skrred during this episode. I mean, you should be skrred as they go to find Skr and they see this random body in a bed that is like...
It's not really a body. It's like a sack of skin.
Yeah, bag. It's basically like a bag of skin that's been sucked of all fluids. Yeah. Like, it's like a raisin body.
Yeah, it's like a raisin body. And reminds me of like the mummy when they would, the guy would like... kill somebody and then it would just be like a husk.
Exactly, and then he turns younger as a result.
Mm-hmm.
But
I do that too. That's why I.
That's
sing.
Why you have your porcelain skin. Mm-hmm. So they end up finding Edward Skr. He has some goop in the corner of his mouth, which we'll find out later. You know, obviously that's from the freaking spider living within him.
Yes.
And the only thing he says is Mulder.
It's well, like he says Mul. Durr.
Yeah, it's like his red rum. Yeah. No, not red rum. Rosebud.
Rosebud.
Christopher Kane would have been really weird if he was saying red rum.
Yeah. But basically, like, he says Mulder, and at this point, this is the point in Mulder's history, Fox Mulder's history,
yes.
where he is working in the behavioral science unit of the FBI doing criminal profiling.
Right. This is prior to, I think, the regression.
He hadn't even discovered the X-Files
yet. This is before the regression hypnosis mm-hmm. where he gets the abduction
this is
memories
him.
Unlocked.
He's an up-and-coming FBI agent.
Yeah, so we get... the appearance of older Arthur Dales, played by Darren McGavin. Is that
mm-hmm.
his name?
Darren McGavin.
I was so excited to see him because he's the dad from A Christmas Story.
Yes, he is. He also was somebody that I guess Chris Carter really, really wanted on the show. He originally wanted him to play, who's that guy? The guy who, one of the senator guy.
Oh, the senator from the beginning of season two.
Yes,
the one
yes. The helper.
Those cocktail
yes,
napkins.
He wanted him to play him, and he did. He couldn't, and so he finally got him in as Arthur Dales. I guess he's a big fan.
Well, I also read that at one point he wanted him to play Bill Mulder.
Yeah, because he's like a big fan of him from, I guess, a show he was in with Burt Reynolds. And
well, I think he was in that. Cold Shack the Night Stalker
yes,
or whatever
yes,
that
yes,
the
yes.
show that Chris Carter loves so much.
Yeah.
But that's wild that, you know, in another world he could have played Mulder's dad. Here he is playing someone who associated with Mulder's dad back in the day.
Yes, exactly. And so basically Mulder comes to see him because this guy was captured, Skr.
Yeah, he basically says Edward Skr was a serial killer. Dales, you chased after him a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the case was eventually dropped and said, hey, what do you know about him because he said my name?
Yeah, and he says, Mulder, that means something to you.
Yeah, and Dales, well, Dales initially is a little, like, keeps him
he
at arm's length.
He doesn't want to talk about
like,
it.
He starts to bloviate about the communist witch hunt in the 40s and 50s. And basically, it leads Mulder to watch some of these Red Scare videos mm-hmm. from the McCarthy hearings. And who does he spot but his own daddy?
His papa. But his dad worked for the State Department, so that's not, like, totally out of the realm of possibility
but
that he would
of those,
be there.
That's one of those probably fun Skinner moments, right, where, hey, we're going to CGI this actor
in
into the black and white footage.
Yeah, and so then we start into flashback world.
Yeah, basically, it's like, Dale's like, okay, now you basically knew the password of how your dad is involved. So let's go flashback. Everyone looks so freaking dapper.
I love it. I love the 50s. And
that's another
looks.
Reason why I would have actually been fine with the spinoff, because I think it could have been, I don't
very,
know, I
like,
love that
Mad Men, very, like, cool.
Very, very early Mad Men. Yeah. When we get later into Mad Men, that's when we get into the hippie
60s
stuff.
And the 70s and the zooby zooby zoo.
Oh my god, imagine if there was a record player that played zooby zooby zoo.
Be bad.
Actually, well, that was one thing that I got. I don't remember.
You
who,
did get that.
Yeah,
somebody bought that for
me,
you.
Someone gave me a half record that had zooby zooby
zoo. A 45, yeah. I don't know where it's around here somewhere.
Somewhere I have it. I don't think it was even like a swag gift from AMC or something. I think someone just got me a 45 of Zoopy Zoopy Zoo.
Yeah, I remember that. And I was like, why did you get this? But yeah, no Zoopy Zoopy Zoo. Anyway.
Unfortunately, but we get
no Zoopies.
Dalesy.
And his partner and communism.
Yeah, so right now, the first thing we see them do is pull up to Edward Skr's house, where essentially this guy, Edward Skr, has been suspected to be a communist.
Mm-hmm. And they arrest him.
Now, I had a moment here.
Which I just did not understand.
Yeah, I saw Edward Skr, and I'm like, Is that Garrett Dillahunt?
And I was like, who the fuck is Garrett Dillahunt?
And it then was indeed Garrett Dillahunt.
And so, okay, here's the thing. I looked him up. I recognize him to an extent. He's been in a lot of stuff.
He's one of those guys.
He's one of those guys, but like, I would never have been able to pull the name Garrett Dillahunt out of my butt.
Yeah, I could have told you that Garrett Dillahunt was a completely made up name.
It's not like, oh, is that George Clooney? Like, you know who
that
is.
He's my George Clooney.
Yeah, clearly. you pulled it out of the air. You were just like, that's Garrett Dillahunt. And I was like, I'm sure it is.
Yeah,
I was like, I believe you.
From Raising Hope. He was recently
No Country
on,
for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men. He was recently on Fear the Walking Dead. I actually got to speak with Garrett Dillahunt.
12 Years a Slave, I guess he was in that.
That makes sense. He sort of does have that, like, plantation owner look, unfortunately.
Yeah, not great. But either way,
and that's why he really plays a great role here. Is because
he's quite young in this.
Yeah, he appears as sort of like the blonde-haired, blue-eyed everyman.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have him have a horrifying alien creature living inside him is that much more fun.
Yeah, this is sucky.
Yeah, and so we basically see that Dales is sort of not completely in his job. Like, he feels bad, you know.
He doesn't really get the whole Red Scare communism thing.
Yeah, because Skrr's wife and children are, like, understandably very emotionally overwhelmed when the father is arrested, and he's like, I don't know if we should be doing this.
Yeah, it's, like, super uncomfortable.
So he goes to this bar where he hangs out a bunch, and then he basically gets informed that he gets called by his partner that Edward Skrr apparently hung himself in his cell
and
like
he's dead.
20 minutes after being arrested.
Yeah, and so he feels like obligated to go apologize to the wife and tell her in person. And when he gets there, he sees Skrr.
Yeah, he sees Edward Skrr just walking around. And so, you know,
in the typical movie manner of probably,
hey, stop.
Hey, you, Skrr.
Yeah, exactly.
Yells his name. And of course he runs away. He doesn't just stop.
Yeah. So we get a little bit of a chase here. And it ends in a very interesting way as basically Skrr gets Dales pinned. And we start to see tendrils come out of his mouth.
And the way that, whatever, your BFF Garrett
Dillahunt.
That does this is, like, he kind of just, like, vomits. Like, he makes, like, vomiting noises.
Yeah, it basically is like there's a creature
it's
living
like gagging,
inside him that's,
yeah.
like, coming out to play.
Yeah, but the way he acts it is, like, ugh. I mean, it's like a dog vomiting.
And I would imagine this wasn't CGI, right? I would imagine this is practical effects.
Yeah, so it's practical effects, and they built this thing that would come out of his actual mouth.
That has to be incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah, so basically, I was trying to read about it, because it's like not something that I was like super familiar with, but I guess that they had to do a lot of stuff in post-production as well. But yeah, I don't know. I don't remember now.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd.
It's
I mean,
gross.
It's a nice piece, though, because I think if it had been CGI.
Yes, okay, so I'm looking it up now. In order to create a convincing period movie, various special effects were used, including a special facial appliance that allowed the alien spider to crawl out of Skrr's mouth and into his victim, and then a bleaching job for the final film to give it an aged feel.
Ooh.
Which is cool, too.
Yeah.
And I remember reading about how they were like scampering around to try to find period costumes because they didn't give them enough notice that this was going to be a period
episode. Gotta be rough. Yeah, you can speak to firsthand like production quality if people notice, well, actually that thing wasn't invented until that year.
Yeah, and then I guess the art director did a bunch of research to try to make J. Edgar Hoover's office like super realistic, and they also had to construct that bomb shelter and like so just a lot was done.
Well, speaking of J. Edgar Hoover, let's meet one of his associates. Here is the X-Files version of none other than Roy Cohn.
Yeah, this was wild.
Yeah, though I think we're used to the Al Pacino slash Nathan Lane Roy
Cohn
from Angels in America.
I kind of like the way that this guy comes across, because he comes across as like very like plain. And I think that was the Roy Cohn like way, that he was just like very like low energy.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the Roy Cohn we see, I mean, the closest comparison that we have is Angels in America. I feel like that's more of like the myth of Roy Cohn, right? The one who's bragging about, you know, the Rothschilds and all that, or the Rosenberg trials. But to your point, it seems like the personification here is he's just like a very powerful yet like very mild mannered guy.
Yeah, and also just like seemingly has no personality.
Yeah, which is also scary in and of itself, in that he's very cold to everything. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he steps in here is because he basically pulls Dales aside and
like
says,
you need to change your report.
Yeah, forget everything that you just experienced.
Yeah, you need to amend your report. I don't think you saw what you saw.
Amend means basically redact, because entire report is all black, save for like a few words here and there.
Yeah, and so it's like pretty shitty.
Yeah. So meanwhile, as Dales is just like, you know, ruminating over his sharpied out report, he and his partner are going to get another call that something's happening in Chevy Chase, Maryland, where they're going to drive down there, and there is some sort of, like, German person, right?
Yeah, it's a German doctor who has died, and they're called in to investigate it. Basically, the local police deny calling them, and Dales finds, like, a coaster in that house, but, like, I guess the guy that's there is just a German doctor that died.
Yeah, it's because there's some German music on our records. We're like, okay, I guess that's a...
And the guy, his partner, Michael, keeps calling him a kraut, which is, like, awful, but...
I mean, that's the 50s for you. But basically, yeah, Dales finds a coaster, I think, of the bar that he was at that says, "Come Alone" on the back. And the person behind the card is Bill Mulder!
Yep, he meets Bill Mulder in a creepy little... like booth,
and this is the Bill Mulder that we have seen before. This is the one who was with this is the one who was with the young cigarette smoking man. This is the one from,
I think it's the same actor, because I remember his eyes, and they're just, they're so weird.
They're so like sunken.
He just has no eyelids, so it's like it, but they're, his eyes are still really large, so it comes across as very unsettling.
Well, I think the last time we saw him, remember, was in those weird flashbacks and demons, right? Yeah. Where he's like closing the door,
and they had that like weird like a weird shutter effect on the camera.
Yeah, and he's still kind of creepy here, too. And it's interesting because you can kind of see glimpses of Fox Mulder, but I feel like Bill Mulder goes through things a little differently. Like, the episode would have ended differently.
Well, it's the time, too. I think it's, like, the way you had to exist in that time.
Yeah, but he's still a little skittish, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why he's pulling Dales aside. He basically gives in this intel that Skrr and these two other guys were part of the State Department, where they had been apparently part of this project to be, quote, turned into something.
They experimented on them.
Yeah, and two of them are killed themselves, and Skrr is the only one left alive.
Right, and the doctor that was killed in the beginning, that they were investigating, was the doctor that did the experiments.
Yeah, because this is sort of part of a bit of like...
It's not Operation Paperclip, but it's like assumed to be that they were taking Nazi... ideas and experiments and doing
I feel
them.
Like it's a little bit related to like hybrids, right?
Yeah, no, it totally is. I'm just saying that like it's not a real thing, you know, like didn't happen. Like Operation Paperclip did happen.
Meanwhile, RIP Dale's partner.
Yeah, Michael, sorry.
Who he has a cat named Myrtle. Who names their cat Myrtle?
I think it's a really cute name for a kitty.
I feel like it's affected by us nowadays because of Moaning Myrtle.
Oh, yeah, maybe. But I think Myrtle would be a really cute cat name.
I just feel like between Myrtle and Polly, I feel like you are aging like, whatever you're naming by 60 years in doing
so. Yeah, but it's a cat. And it's like he lives alone with a cat named Myrtle.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious.
Well, now he no longer lives.
No, and his cat is probably, you know, orphaned, which is so sad.
Yeah, and this is when we see, like, the full effect of it, right? Where, you know, Skrr was able to only get just the tip, if you will, with Dales.
Ew.
Now he gets, like, full...
So I guess the weird thing about this is that, like, Skrr was experimented on. This thing was embedded into him. So how... He's basically been living his life having to kill people. And so he chooses Hayes because he cuts his phone line.
Yeah, it's some sort of, like, bloodlust a little bit. Yeah.
He has to, but he doesn't want to. But he does it to this guy just because he feels like...
What, the feds are onto him or something?
Yeah, I guess, like, I don't know, yeah. He believes they're part of the whole plot.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Mulder's also going to reveal that essentially all this guff about, oh, yes, Skrr's a communist, was all fabricated by Roy Cohn and McCarthy to basically, like, obscure the truth and to basically give them an excuse to bring him in.
And and he kind of insinuates that the entirety of the, like, the communist scare, the Red Scare, whatever, was about covering up things that were not communism.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's a really fun tie into all that stuff from the beginning of season five, right? The whole, the government is, or the almost the opposite of, we're creating an alien conspiracy to cover up government stuff. This is, we're creating a government thing to cover up an alien conspiracy.
Yeah. And not just aliens, but other stuff, too. Experimentation on humans, maybe not even have to do with aliens.
Yeah, and so, unfortunately, Dales is going to lose his partner here, and Roy Cohn just drops on by, basically, to throw in a nice little threat of, hey, you better comply or you're going to be a communist yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like the origin of the X-Files. I think this is a really fun scene.
I forgot about this, but it is cute. Basically, there's a secretary at the FBI office who is helping Dales find a file that mentions the other two men who had committed suicide.
I do not think it's coincidental that this lady helping him is a red-haired woman.
I mean, probably not, but not something that I like.
Yeah, I thought for a hot second I'd be like, thank you, Mrs. Scully, you know?
But she explains that all of the files that are unsolved cases, she files under X because there's more room in that filing cabinet than you.
Well, yeah, because you got for unsolved mysteries basically is full at this point. So they have to move over to X.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're called X-Files.
Mm-hmm, which I think is just so cool.
Yeah, because I think you initially assumed like, oh, X for extraterrestrial. But no, it's one of those things of, oh, why do we have this? Well, because a long time ago, this one thing happened to happen. And that's why we call it this
now. Yeah, and a long time ago, we used physical filing cabinets and like all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough room in the Rolodex and they didn't do their spring cleaning with the U-Files, so now they're X-Files.
Yeah, exactly. So they basically, they find out that one of the people, I guess, is still in the morgue and Dales is going to go and convince the guy to do an autopsy.
No, we did both know that this is a very, very handsome coroner.
I thought he was very cute.
He was pulling off those horn-rimmed glasses. Yeah,
very much so.
What a looker,
but what a rule breaker.
Yeah, well, listen, we've watched enough X-Files to know that, like, coroners don't really give a crap.
No, they don't.
They'll do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and so Dales convinces him to cut open the body, and they find the
big-ass spider in his chest.
And the guy, like, kind of notices right away that there are sutures in there as well, so he's like, this has been sewn into this guy's esophagus.
Yeah, so we find out they went through a xenotransplantation, I believe, is the
that
official
out of his
term.
Butt, but yeah.
So, and this is where I was mentioned before, we find out that the Nazi doctors had essentially conducted experiments of grafting, hence the sutures, alien species into humans. So it's like getting an organ transplant, but of a different species.
Yeah, and like, how does that work? We don't know.
And obviously, much like other transplants, it didn't take.
It didn't take. And so they are trying to kill all these guys, basically.
Yeah,
before anyone finds out.
And that's the thing as well, is that, Mulder warns Dales that Oscar is basically on a revenge tour trying to get back at the people who felt wronged him. And that's where, unfortunately, his partner and him fell into it. It's like, oh, these Fed guys are after me. Therefore, they must be with Conan McCarthy. Let me go after them.
Yeah. And Dales is like, I'm going to go to Skur's wife and I'm going to tell her exactly what happened. And that he's basically says like he wants to help him. And
she says, oh, I'm not, my husband's not here.
Yeah.
Go
I mean,
away,
she
sir.
Plays it cool. And then she like, he gives her the same coaster that says the bar and meet me, come alone, whatever, and wants her to give it to Skur. But she goes down to the bomb shelter in the backyard.
Yeah.
And he's been, basically, it's, he can't control it anymore.
I will admit, I can't see a bomb shelter without thinking about Blast from the Past.
I love that movie
so much. Christopher Walken's, like, big garden and everything.
It's the best. That movie's so great.
Yeah, vintage Brendan Fraser, speaking of the Mummy.
Yeah, and Alicia Silverstone.
But yeah, unfortunately, he has to kill his wife.
He just does. Like, he has no control.
Yeah, and that's what he tells her, right? And so it shows here that, like, clearly the alien is in control, not Skur.
His parasite.
Meanwhile, Dales basically goes straight from there into basically getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Getting in the car with Cohen and Mulder and being taken to none other than J. Edgar Hoover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, like, wild.
Yeah, and so Hoover's going to go into this big, you know, bloviating monologue, right? Saying, oh, the ratio of communists to non-communists has gone up. If we want to defeat them, we have to use their tools and use things their enemies cannot to ensure that we survive.
Well, yeah, and I guess that, I mean, the issue here is that they try to kill Dales, basically, by letting Skur attack him initially.
Yeah.
And then they actually...
Yeah, because they decide to use him as bait.
Yeah, and they underestimate him, basically, and they rush in and find that Dales has actually just handcuffed him.
No, the Russians
alive.
Were in the other two episodes.
Stop it.
So, well, speaking of Russians, actually, the Hoover speech really reminded me of this idea, right? Of, like, we have to ensure our own survival by doing this. It's very much out of this idea of colonization and what the syndicate was doing to ensure their own survival.
They're drinking their own Kool-Aid, that's for sure.
Yeah, so basically, as you said, Skur meets Dales, and, like, Dales is really trying to reason with this guy at
first.
But
he has there's no ability to reason with somebody.
Skur says, I'm dead inside. Like, I'm basically the creature at this point.
Yeah, like, please, like, leave me alone. I'm going to kill you.
But, you know, it turns out that Mulder does try to go in briefly, but is held back. And just when they thought that Dales was dead and they hear quiet on the radio, Dales was able to subdue Skrr for the second time.
Yeah, and so basically, you know, that we're under the assumption now that they've captured him and they're going to, like, keep him, like, for more experimentation or something.
Yeah, and so Dales is going to tell Fox Mulder in the present day,
who's pretty upset because he finds out that his dad was, like, the bad guy here.
Yeah, and this is before he found out that his dad was with the cigarette-smoking man, you know?
Yeah, and what's also weird is that you think they've captured Skrr here, but then you remember, oh, at the beginning of this episode, Skrr's alive and, like, living in some remote Wisconsin.
So Dales is going to say that, obviously, he was sort of fired. He was disbarred, if you will. Mm-hmm. His reputation was ruined for his insubordination, and basically warns Fox Mulder, like, the same thing might happen to you. And so, yeah, the question is,
how did he escape?
And we see that Bill Mulder was tasked with bringing Skrr in, assumingly to, you know, put him down. And he lets him go.
And he lets him go. Yeah, he takes him to some remote location, gives him the keys to the car and walks away, basically, and is like, you know, be good.
I mean, I love the move from a morality perspective, but Bill Mulder, maybe you didn't need to give him the car.
Yeah, well, also, like, this guy is overcome by a parasite. So he basically, until the 90s, from the 50s, continues to suck the life out of other human beings.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Because I felt so warm about the end of
this
episode.
I did as well, like, oh, from a Mulder perspective.
Oh, he let a serial killer go.
He basically let a serial killer go. Somebody that he knowingly was going to go around, not intentionally, but would have to kill people. So, not great. Not great.
And he gave away his entire car at that.
I mean, it probably wasn't his car.
Yeah, like but I...
FBI car.
That may be a boneheaded move aside. I really like this episode. I think, you know, I'm a sucker, much like Musings of a Cigarette-Smoking Man, for including X-Files stuff with historical events. I know it might seem schlocky on paper, a little Forrest Gumpy.
Yes,
but
totally.
But I just like the way it was done here and how, again, it ties into the overall themes of, you know, supernatural stuff obscured by government activity or vice versa. It was a fun way to think about what was really going on with the communist hearings. Was there something else behind it?
Yeah, I mean, I love that. And I love also these episodes that kind of go into the past even further than the 90s, which is, you know, where past to us. But yeah, good episode.
Spook of the week for these two very
for
different
episodes. For sure, Skrr and his spider.
Yes, absolutely that for the second one. He is by far the spookiest. One of, actually, I think the spookiest people we've encountered since, like, the days of Dwayne Barry and Edward Toombs.
Gross, yeah. Totally, like, kind of, like, makes your stomach churn. And then I would say the daycare lady.
Yes, I don't think the doll counts. And
Also, honestly, yes, she's creepy, but I didn't find her as creepy as I think I was supposed to find her.
Yeah, when you're both creepy and judgmental, double jeopardy for you, daycare lady.
Yeah, totally.
So you're the spook of the week. Angela, we are reaching the end of season 5, and appropriately so, next week we are doing the season 5 finale, The End.
Yeah, so the reason Gillian Anderson was not in this episode was because she was filming still Fight the Future.
The movie,
which is coming up as well.
Yeah, so next week it's just going to be one episode. We're going to do the movie the week after, but I can imagine, so it's interesting, it's called The End. I'd be intrigued to see what people thought about that title and what that means. Because obviously this is not the end of the series, but it might signify there is an end to something happening.
Yeah,
here.
And I think also just the end is, like, very, like, ominous.
Yeah, so we're reaching the end of season 5. One that is, I think, a really strong season.
It's probably
overall.
The best. Probably has all my favorite episodes in it.
Probably.
Definitely
just
does.
Just probably. So if you have any thoughts about The End, again, only one episode next week, but I imagine it's going to be a doozy. Bloomfiles at postshowrecaps.com, xfiles at postshowrecaps.com, at Ange Pelagi, at a Mike Bloom type, at postshowrecaps. You know all this. You're going through your U files right now because you basically have this on a speed dial at this point.
I should hope so.
Let us know your thoughts. Of course, check out all the other great stuff going on postshow recaps proper as well, especially if you are a patron. Of course, we thank you for your support. That's going to do it this week on the Bloom Files. Next week, again, Season 5, Episode 20, The End, and we have reached the end of this podcast as well. Special thanks to Corey B. for his theme song, which you are listening to on your record players coming from the other room. Watch out for any killer dolls that might come with it. But until next week, case closed.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.